What do markets think about the primary season so far? In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. When we think of antitrust investigations, we might imagine giant behemoth companies merging, stifling competition. But the Federal Trade Commission is now looking at much smaller deals. It's asking companies like Amazon and Google for more information about their takeovers of hundreds of small startups over the past 10 years. The concern is that tech giants may be using acquisitions to hunt down and take out their future competition. William Reinhart joins us now. He's senior research fellow at the Center for Growth and Opportunity. Good morning.
Good morning.
The worry here is that, you know, these are big fish buying up and killing not competitors, but future competitors. Is that not a reasonable concern?
I think that is a reasonable concern, but the idea that you wouldn't, you know, that you would buy a company just to stop future innovation, that is really just doesn't seem particularly logical to me, because what a large percentage of these deals are doing is really trying to acquire talent and acquire technology and then embed those into the company and into, you know, new products that are going to go out into the market. The best example of a very small company being acquired to become very big is probably Android.
The goal of some startups is precisely to be bought, but they could have an IPO instead or go public or something like that.
Yeah. But increasingly going public is difficult. A lot of my friends that have worked in startups, they really don't see IPOs as an exit strategy. There's a wide range of exit strategies, and a lot of companies really do want to be acquired because it's the easiest way to exit, especially for investors and for the talent that is currently at those companies.
William Reinhart, Senior Research Fellow at the Center for Growth and Opportunity, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bernie Sanders won the New Hampshire primary. Pete Buttigieg came in second. Amy Klobuchar third. Markets didn't appear to react. Let's ask what, if anything, that means. Susan Schmidt is head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors. Hi.
Good morning.
Are markets paying attention to the primaries?
It doesn't appear so. The market is doing very well and really focused on what managements are saying. Don't forget that we're still in the back half of earnings season, which seems to stretch on forever. We have company management teams coming out talking about their businesses and, for the most part, sending very positive messaging. The market's looking at the primaries as background noise, and I think the market is really assuming that despite all that activity, the Trump administration will stay in place. The markets are focused on the business and assuming no change, just moving forward.
How can we tell that? How can we tell that's what markets are taking from this race?
I think it's interesting, and we'll see it in the market today. Watch what happens on some of the industries that could be really impacted by a change in policy, in a policy that Bernie Sanders is talking about. So when we talked about healthcare stocks, we saw the market react to that a year ago, and we saw healthcare stocks go down as a group as the potential and the funding for Sanders' campaign went up. We're not seeing that extreme reaction this time, and I think that's an indicator that the market is looking at this saying it's far too soon to tell and putting it in the background.
Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. equities with Aviva Investors. Thanks, as always.
Thank you.
The banking industry is coming under scrutiny on Capitol Hill today. A House Financial Services subcommittee is holding a hearing in just a few minutes on diversity, or lack thereof, at the biggest banks in the country. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
After the 2008 financial crisis and the reforms that followed with the Dodd-Frank Act, banks were supposed to become more accountable to the public, and part of that was by becoming more diverse.
Because when people that are representative of our nation actually are in these positions, then communities of color get served better.
Rowan Al-Halabi is with the Greenlining Institute, a nonprofit focused on economic justice. She says predatory lending disproportionately hurt people of color in the run-up to the Great Recession. Since then, she says, the industry has paid lip service to diversity and inclusion.
But we're not seeing data to really back that up.
While Dodd-Frank reforms require monitoring of diversity at the biggest banks, it's not clear how much has changed.
Indeed, the progress has been slow. It's been glacial.
Ronald Parker heads the National Association of Securities Professionals. He points to a report by the House Diversity and Inclusion Subcommittee last year, which showed banks' senior leadership and boards of directors are still mostly white and male. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
This year, Roger Federer is expected to become the world's first tennis billionaire. There are only three other athletes whose net worth is in the billions: Michael Jordan, Floyd Mayweather, and Tiger Woods. Federer has been at the top of the men's singles tennis world for two decades. He has 20 Grand Slam titles to his name. Marketplace's Andy Euler reports that trophies are nice, but that's not where the money's coming from.
As of last summer, Roger Federer's 20-year career on-court earnings totaled just about $125 million. A good chunk of change, but Daniel Kaplan, who writes about the business of sport for The Athletic, says for tennis stars,
the bulk of their career earnings will come from non-play. And it's through endorsements, appearances, hospitality. Players will clean up in that regard.
Never used to be that way, says Ed McCrogan, senior editorial manager at Tennis Channel, when athletes were just athletes.
We're in an era now where athletes are brands, and those two things come hand in hand. And that was not the case in the time of some of the more famous tennis players, John McEnroe, Chris Evert, etc.
He says 40 years ago, McEnroe and Evert had the odd racket deal and maybe a shoe sponsor, but they weren't being courted by non-sports sponsors, companies like Rolex and Credit Suisse. Federer is also a spokesperson for a chocolatier and a champagne maker.
I think what Federer has done is he has built the Federer brand carefully, but also deliberately. He's something certainly more than just a tennis champion.
Companies want people to aspire to be like Roger Federer. They hope consumers will feel that buying their products gets them closer to that. Michaela Dufer is a sociology professor at Brigham Young University. She says companies use a range of different athletes for different sports to target the demographic they think is most likely to buy their product.
If we look at NBA players, for example, where the league is predominantly African American, LeBron James endorses Sprite rather than champagne.
Tennis has traditionally had a white, upper-middle-class audience. Now, some tennis players, like Serena Williams, have helped buck trends, but her white rival, Maria Sharapova, drew more endorsement dollars.
I think we're still really allowing these corporations to set the agenda, layering all kinds of their views about race or gender on top of those things.
Shaping public views, but increasingly having to react to them as they evolve. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.